Hi everyone, Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. It's Friday morning, which means it's time for the week in review and preview conversation, where my guests will recap how markets have performed over the past few sessions and preview what you can expect in the week ahead. Today's conversation will primarily focus on the May employment report and the Fed's beige book. Joining us for the conversation, I'm glad to welcome back Danny Kessler, asset allocation strategist with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Danny, welcome. We're happy to have you.
Great to be back, Siobhan. Thanks for having me on.
Perfect, Danny. So let's get started. Let's begin with the May employment report. How did the data come in, and how would CIO characterize the current health of the U.S. labor market?
Sure, Siobhan. Yeah, so this is hot off the press, having just been released a half hour ago. Overall, we characterize the report as mixed. The headline non-farm payrolls number came in at 139,000. Slowing from last month, but well above consensus estimates. But there was also 95,000 of downward revisions for the prior 2 months. The unemployment rate stayed steady at 4.2%, but only because the participation rate fell a couple ticks. Average hourly earnings remained solid at 0.4% month over month. The payroll growth was heavily concentrated in healthcare and leisure and hospitality, while it was near zero in most other industries. The number of federal government employees fell by 22,000, which is a sizable increase, but not dramatic. Bottom line from the report is that the data is not weak enough for the Fed to consider cutting rates yet. We are expecting slower payroll growth in the second half of the year as tariffs start to have a larger impact on the economy. This will be supported by the immigration crackdown, which is likely to limit labor supply growth and any increase in the unemployment rate. There were also a couple other labor market data releases this week, including weekly jobless claims yesterday, with initial claims rising above consensus estimates, but continuing jobless claims declining to below consensus estimates after rising last week. The April JOLTS, or job openings and labor turnover survey, was also released earlier this week, with job openings rising above consensus estimates. The hiring rate edged higher to 3.5%, while the quits rate, which is a key measure of worker confidence, dipped down to 2%, its lowest level since 2021. Layoffs ticked higher, but still remain at historically low levels. Although job openings rose in April and overall conditions remain solid, the modestly declining quits rate and slight uptick in layoffs indicate that there is some softening in the labor market momentum. The labor data releases this week appear to be in line with our broader view of the labor market, which is one that is cooling gradually, but with demand for workers remaining solid.
So outside of today's jobs report, what were some other notable data releases?
Yeah, so I just mentioned a few of the notable labor market data releases, but we did get more important economic data outside of that. Equities and rates markets stayed mostly range-bound to go with those releases. Before digging into a few of the other economic events, there was one other development I wanted to highlight in the past few days, and that's that a couple of tech giants actually signed deals for nuclear energy amid power demand fueled by AI growth, which is supportive of the tech and utility sectors that we rate as attractive as part of the UBS investment trios. So turning to economic events that happened over the past week, we started with the week with the release of the ISM manufacturing PMI on Monday and services on Wednesday. For those of you that don't know, ISM stands for Institute of Supply Management and PMI stands for Purchasing Manager Index. So these indices are a measure of economic activity in the manufacturing and services sectors through surveys of participating purchasing managers. Both releases were disappointing, declining from previous months and below consensus expectations, with the services industry coming in particularly weak. Construction spending growth was also released on Monday, and that came in disappointing as well at -0.4% on a month-over-month basis. April Eurozone inflation was also released this past week, dipping below the 2% target on a year-over-year basis for the first time since this past October. And then the European Central Bank, in turn, followed by lowering interest rates another 25 basis points for the eighth time this cycle, bringing the deposit rate down to 2%. We expect the Federal Reserve to resume easing in the second half of 2025 with 75 basis points of cuts on the year and 25 more to start next year. The path of the Fed remains data dependent, and members have indicated that they are not yet ready to begin lowering interest rates in the current economic backdrop of a resilient labor market and economic uncertainty due to tariffs.
We also received the Fed's beige book on Wednesday. Is there anything to note there?
Yeah, so that was another one of the big economic data releases this past week that I haven't touched on yet. For some background, the beige book is a summary of anecdotal information on current economic conditions prepared by the Federal Reserve. So each Federal Reserve bank will gather information through reports from bank and branch directors and interviews with key business contacts, economists, and market experts. So this latest release of the report showed weakening economic activity, with all 12 districts reporting elevated economic and policy uncertainty. And as a result, businesses and households are showing growing hesitation around spending and hiring decisions. Tariffs, of course, remain a major concern, as they were mentioned 122 times in the report, which is up from 107 in the previous edition. So the release illustrates that while we are yet to see a major slowdown in growth or a rise in prices, many contacts across districts now expect both costs and prices to rise more quickly and significantly in the coming months. Companies are split and undecided on how to handle tariff-related costs, with some planning to pass these costs on to consumers, while others are considering temporary fees or reduced profit margins. The tone of the report has become notably more cautious, with uncertainty around trade policy weighing on investment and hiring. These effects are likely to begin to show up in hard economic data in the coming months, in our view. At a time when economic data is noisy, anecdotal evidence can become increasingly important, and the picture painted by the beige book this past month is not a bright one. Despite this downbeat outlook, the current backdrop remains in a forgiving position, with inflation moderating and the labor market staying relatively resilient. We expect U.S. growth to slow to around 1.5% in 2025, GDP growth, that is, and with Fed rate cuts beginning later this year in our base case.
So we are coming to the end of our conversation, Danny. Turning to the week ahead, what is taking place that investors should be mindful of?
Yeah, so it's another busy week of economic data next week, starting with the NFIB Small Business Optimism Survey on Tuesday, followed by the Consumer Price Index Inflation Gauge on Wednesday and the Producer Price Index Inflation Gauge on Thursday, along with weekly jobless claims on Thursday. And then finally on Friday, we wrap up with the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey. Investors will get a few more data points to add to the inflation puzzle, with the picture of the inflation and Fed rate path still not fully in focus. Outside of economic data, President Trump's second term has certainly been eventful, with rarely any dull weeks, and that looks set to continue into the summer. There are plenty of domestic and international policy storylines to follow, starting, of course, with tariffs, but also including the president's One Big Beautiful Bill, the war in Ukraine, travel and immigration restrictions here in the U.S., and most recently, the president's public feuds. None of these headlines have any planned resolutions in the coming week, and all contribute to market volatility. But the biggest drivers of markets in the near term are likely to be tariffs, the war, and the fiscal bill. The war in Ukraine has contributed to price movements in commodity markets this year, with gold rising on geopolitical uncertainty, but oil prices falling. Of course, the most important impact in the war is the tragic number of lives lost, and the governments across Europe are working with the U.S. and Ukraine to increasingly pressure Russia for peace. Turning to tariffs, the president ramped up his rhetoric again last week, telling countries to come back with their best trade deals for the U.S. Meanwhile, tensions flared again with China following a previous agreement and de-escalation. Presidents Xi and Trump are set to meet in person soon after a phone call yesterday. President Trump has also ramped up pressure on the EU, threatening 50% tariffs on the bloc, while 50% tariffs on aluminum and steel have gone into effect this past week on the rest of the world, excluding the UK. This all comes in the aftermath of the U.S. Court of International Trade's May 28th ruling to invalidate and permanently enjoin President Trump's use of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, or IEEPA, to enact tariffs. Although the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit granted administrative stay since then, which is allowing the tariffs to remain in effect temporarily. So So while the future result of this legal battle is not yet clear, it can be a bit complicated for investors to try to follow. Our view is that the president's tariffs are likely to stay in place through one channel or another. There are multiple legal pathways for the administration to rebuild the wall of tariffs. So we expect the effective tariff rate, which is the dollar amount of customs duties divided by imports, to end the year at roughly 15%, which is near where we are now and many times higher than the 2% we begin the year at. The economy will have to adapt, but we believe that it can, albeit with slowing growth and upside risks to inflation. And then lastly, on the president's One Big Beautiful Bill, a July 4th deadline has been set, and we believe the bill will get passed to the Senate following further negotiations after it barely passed through the House by one vote last month. The bill is set to cost about $2.4 trillion, which could initially be stimulative. The Yale Budget Lab estimates that tariffs could raise $2 trillion in revenue over the next 10 years, which would offset much of the cost of the bill. But that said, the U.S. will not have improved its ballooning fiscal deficit as a result. So as has been the case over the past few months, there is plenty of activity for investors to monitor, along with a busy schedule of economic data next week.
Okay, perfect, Danny. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks again for having me on, Siobhan. Happy Friday, everyone.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.